So today's topic, it said in the email by Member Solutions, which is a great, great thing that's coming out now. We've been doing for the last, you know, I don't even know, I think it's about 5 or 6 months now, was the announcement to this teleseminar, and it said 10 upgrade system must-haves. And the description was, want to improve your current upgrade system or start one for the first time, then get ready to take notes as Ali shares the 10 steps that he uses to upgrade the majority of his students onto his most elite memberships. So hello and welcome to our second teleseminar of 2009. Can you believe it? You're already into February. Time flies so quickly when you're having fun and also when you're just working hard and in the trenches every day. As you know, I'm a big proponent of goal setting and time management and time slicing. In fact, whatever I've achieved in my life, I think especially in my professional life, has been due to goal setting. I've been working diligently to make this year a year I can be proud of. And right now, I'm working on so many things at once that it's mind-boggling. But to say the least, I think and, well, not I think, I know I thrive on this kind of thing, this kind of stress. As you're all aware, we're still in some sort of slump with the economy. But if you've heard my last teleseminar, I chose to not participate. I've said this in the past, and it's very easy to get caught up in the surroundings and become a part of the thought process. And here's an example. Do you remember the 80s? You know, for me, this was an amazing time. I was in a rock band, and half the things I'm going to mention I participated in. But for some of you, you probably, you know, remember it was an amazing time. I know for me it was unbelievable. But just remember this. Remember hair that was hairsprayed so high and it stood a mile high in the air? And remember members-only jackets and parachute pants? And how about guys wearing half shirts? How about girls in spandex and leg warmers? So the reason why I bring this up, looking back, we may ask ourselves, how did we ever wear that stuff? Or how did anyone wear that stuff if you didn't participate in it? Realizing that this was all part of that trend, that time, the media, the hype, but nonetheless, you get caught up in this kind of stuff. Right now, we're going through a time in our society that's pretty dark, you know, with the media filling everyone's heads every day with death and despair and war and, you know, economy and job loss and so many people, it seems, that are being, you know, thrown in prison for insider trading and, you know, doing things that are just despicable. You know, it's nothing but gloom and doom. And I think the only way people are listening to this kind of stuff is due to the extremes that are being presented through the media. You know, people have been so hardened to things like this that it takes a, you know, a catastrophic event for people to, you know, really pique their ears. Just recently while reading an amazing book called Rich Brother, Rich Sister by Rob Kiyosaki. He's the author of that best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and many other highly successful books that I highly recommend to all of you. This one is called Rich Brother, Rich Sister. And he speaks of a similar time back during the Vietnam War. He said that most people, of course, at that time were very depressed, sad, and had a bad outlook on society. People, especially the youth of America, didn't believe they had much of a future. So they were less likely to succeed or try to achieve. I believe that this is a process that's repeating itself, and the media is to blame. If a person is constantly hearing the economy is in the toilet, no matter how rich they are, they're going to think about different ways and change their spending habits. Their future may change due to what they believe and what's going on in their lives. So everyone's going to be affected to some extent. But I ask, you know, if you are going to participate in this kind of mentality. The reason's simple. If you choose not to participate, you don't have to. Now, does this mean what you're seeing going on around you isn't real? The answer is absolutely a resounding no, but it does mean that you do have a choice. You know, you don't have to do what 90% of our society is doing in shutting down. And, you know, quite frankly, whether it's the economy or anything else, this happens anyway. The answer is don't get involved in all the stuff you hear, and don't just accept your fate based on what is being said on a daily basis. I told this story some years ago on one of my teleseminars. And it was, and the economy, you know, was in a much better state at that time. It's the story of a hot dog salesman. You know, he was famous for the best hot dogs in town. He had a roadside trailer, and he sold $1 million in hot dogs per year. He was a smart man. He invested his money into real estate in the stock market. He had his own financial advisor and really was making a great living and a ton of money by selling hot dogs. One day he met with his financial advisor, and the advisor said to him that you may want to be cautious because times are changing and a recession or a drop in, you know, in sales is around the corner. The hot dog man said, "What do I do? What should I lean back on?" And the advisor said, "In times like these, cut back on some of your biggest expenses." This all seemed to be logical or a logical way to think, so he cut back on some of his expenses. Some of his advertising was included in it, and lo and behold, it was perfect timing. His advisor was right, and he hit the nail right on the head. Just as he was cutting back, he noticed his business slowing down. This trend continued for months as he continued to sell his hot dogs, sometimes even being a little cautious, scrimping a little here and there on, you know, the condiments and cutting back on the onions and saving wherever he could. At some point, you know, he realized that business was truly dropping off. About a year later, he met back with his financial advisor again, and the financial advisor gave him some thoughts of hope. He said, "In the future, the economy is going to pick up, and, you know, you should really go back to what you were doing. You know, do what you did in the past, more advertising, you know, give them the best service you could possibly give. Make sure that you give them loads of condiments and onions and so on and so forth." And lo and behold, his business picked back up again. When he looked back on his situation years later, he realized that when he stopped marketing is when the business dropped. When he started again, that's when the business picked up. So even in a downed economy, we tend to look at it and say to ourselves, what can I do to make my business better? Well, can I market or spend money here, or should I save and not do that? When the reality is that whatever you've been doing, you need to do more of in order to grow your business. You need to become better at marketing. You have to market more. Maybe not spend as much money, but you need to get the name out there somehow, some way. Just recently, I spoke with one of my clients, and I asked them the question. I ask this question quite often, and I said, "How much do you market your school?" And they said to me, which is a common response that I find on a regular basis, they said, "I market a lot." So I of course, asked, you know, what is a lot to them? And, you know, they really didn't have an answer. So I said, let's kind of put it into perspective. How many hours a week? And they said, maybe about 2 hours a week. And when you think about it, this is primarily the most important thing you could do in your business. If you're not getting the word out there, no matter what you do, no matter how great you are, no matter how unbelievable your school is, no one will know about it. So if you're not getting the word out there, you are failing yourself. I know sometimes we look at marketing as a taboo, and we look at advertising and sales as a similar taboo, but I'm not sure why people look at it this way. It's a necessary thing that you need to do and feel good about to stay in business. The reality is that if you're not getting any – it's not getting any easier either, that, you know, you need to get better at what you do. For example, in New York State, 12 years ago, we had about 400 schools. Now, 12 years later, we have about 1,400. There's a school on every corner in my town. It's amazing. Some in my town right now, in my main headquarters area, I have about 4 competitors. When years ago, I was the only school in town. So people are looking at our business as some sort of commodity to some extent. They think even if we have the best service in the world, and, you know, it's kind of like shooting ourselves in the foot, that if we have the best service in the world and they don't know any better, clients believe that every school does what we do. So in the past, I've written articles called Tooting Your Own Horn, getting out there and telling people, do not be afraid to tell people why you're special, why your school is different, why you're better than the competition, why you're better than typical baseball, soccer, football, t-ball, whatever it may be. You have to toot your own horn. You know, you may ask, what do I do to stay on top or to stay in business? The answer is simple. You have to work at it every day, work twice as hard or 3 times or 4 times as hard as you've been working. And I notice that when I do that, that the efforts I put in come out in the results, because I realize that I have to work every day to get myself to grow my school. I notice when my program managers and chief instructors stop working at it, the results show that they're not putting in the effort. For me, I am personally marketing each and every day in some fashion or another. I'm on the phone continually calling leads, old leads, trial classes, missed trial classes, and I am relentless until I get a please leave me alone. We're not interested anymore. Before that, I do not give up at all. I had hired a program manager just recently that I only had him on staff for 2 weeks, and then I had to let him go because he was just not performing where I wanted him to perform. I asked him to make phone calls. I came in the next day, and he said, well, I didn't want to call them back again. I just called them 2 days ago. And I said, we call people every day until we personally get in touch with them. We don't give up. You know, we cycle through the mistrials, the people who showed up for a class and didn't sign up. We want to talk to them personally. And what I find, because I'm relentless, I find that people do appreciate it. You know, they may not call us back right away because maybe something's on their mind or they're in the middle of dinner or they're too busy because they have to run out to go to soccer practice or to a PTA meeting. So I don't give up. And then when I talk to them in person, if they're not happy, they'll just say, we're not interested anymore. And, of course, I let it go at that. But remember, life is all about hard work and dedication. Even in the Bible, it says something to the effect that you must make your own destiny. Don't expect God to do it all for you, right? And, you know, here's five questions that I want you guys to write down right now while you're here. Number one, the topic is, of course, upgrades, right? So do you have an upgrade program in your school? If not, the answer is get on the phone with me and let's talk about getting them set up and start one immediately. But the question, do you have an upgrade system in your school? Number two, if the answer is yes, the next question is it working? How many of your students are upgrading? Number three, what is the system you have in place for upgrades to get the upgrade? Number four, do you follow a marketing plan to upgrade? And five, if you do, how consistent is it? Because I found in all my years in business that I have a lot of grand ideas and hopes, and I've started system after system and program after program. And, you know, if I don't get the desired results right away, if people aren't jumping out of their seats, then sometimes it falls to the wayside. This happens quite often with referral programs. Whole nother topic. But, you know, we don't get the results, so we abandon ship. So, again, here are the five questions. Number one, do you have an upgrade system in your school? Number two, if yes, the next question is it working for you? So number two, is it working for you? Number three, what is your system for upgrades? How are you going to get upgrades? And four, do you follow a marketing plan to upgrade? Because everything that you do must be into a systemized upgrade plan. And number five, if you do, how consistent is the marketing plan? Now, here's my philosophy on the business side of martial arts in a nutshell, and I might get a little philosophical here, so bear with me. You know, some people have compared me to the McDojo mentality of the world, and it's quite hurtful at times from my martial art perspective, but of course I look at this as a compliment as well as an insult. People who obviously coined the phrase McDojo were people who were probably unsuccessful or ignorant, for lack of better words, to the fact that the more successful you are at a martial arts school or at any business, the more people you can help. I, of course, realize that some of the people who use the phrase McDojo again are looking at some school owners as sellouts. They use this term like they're belt factories, you know, that they're low quality and they're just doing this for the money. And you know what? A good friend of mine is quite famous, and you know, he's a magician in Las Vegas, makes millions and millions of dollars. He had said to me that, you know what, when you're on top or you're any kind of success, people will always take shots at you. So understand that the better you do, the more people that will be out there trying to bring you down. But anyway, I also want to be clear that no matter whether you're a 15th-degree black belt and a champion UFC fighter doesn't give you the right to run a martial arts school. I mean, anyone has the right to run a school, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be good at what you do. My philosophy is a martial arts school is a life skill institute, a place where people see that they have potential for more in their lives. Not only should they be learning martial arts physical skills, but spiritual skills and mental skills. With that being said, you have to be a good business person in order to achieve that goal. If you open a school and it's a total failure and you go out of business, like I see many schools do, then who are you helping? I've had people choose schools down the road from me because they've said with a smirk on their face, almost throwing it in my face, that those guys down the road don't do contracts, ha-ha, you know? And I wish them well. Lo and behold, they went to the school, and that school has gone out of business. So who has the last laugh? And I guess I do, although rather than laughing, I'm sad over it because I lost that student. So obviously it's bad for our industry to have poorly trained business people and martial artists out there running schools. So that's why my life goal lately has become the goal is to help martial artists professionalize their schools and themselves and become the best possible business people, role models, mentors, and instructors possible. Really, I see, though, even though that there's all this knowledge out there, that there's less and less people out there running schools because, of course, more and more schools are opening up, that there's less people out there with the qualities necessary to run a really great organization. So let's quickly look at the Olympic swimmer, you know, without mentioning names, who just got caught taking bong hits and partying with some college friends or something like that. What message is he giving to our upcoming athletes, students, and youth of America? The answer is quite clear. He's telling everyone it's okay to do this and still be the fastest swimmer in the world. He simply doesn't realize that he's hurting many people, and he doesn't realize that he has an obligation to do the right thing, just like we do as martial arts school owners, to keep our schools, our businesses strong, and keep ourselves in business because we have an obligation to those students. If he chose to not participate in this swimmer, in this responsibility, that's his choice, but then I believe that he shouldn't be in this position. Anyway, so school owners need to professionalize their business. I'm going to start with the front desk manager / program manager, or if it's your one-man show, the owner. The owner has to have an action plan. I'm going to first outline 5 steps towards getting upgrades. Then I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on each step so it's going to be clear for you. Then, of course, I'll ask for any questions. So number one, for upgrading, you need to identify your potential upgrades way ahead of time. I recommend at least two months in advance. Number one, identify your potential upgrades. Number two, work the leads in a professional manner, obviously, right? Number three, continue until they say no. Number four, move on to others and restart the process. And number five, set goals. Now let me break this down in order. Identify your potential upgrade students. So you have a student base and you have, let's say, upgrades in place. Let's say a black belt club, the most simplest form of my upgrade in my school. And I need to sit down 2 months in advance and I want to look at who is upgradable. Now, first I want to add on one thing to our conversation, which for my front desk manager, program manager, is our attendance cards. And I want to use this as an example of how we intertwine, like a spider web, all the different systems within my school. So again, identify your potentials. Now here's our simple way of doing this. Our front desk manager takes attendance in our school. We use a computer program to keep records of the attendance, but we also have a hard file card in a file box. We've been through it all, so trust me on this. Some people might say that's barbaric and, it's just the old way, but we've had fingerprint scanners, barcodes on cards. We've even thought of tattooing it on people's, hands so that they could just come through and, scan their hand. Of course, I'm kidding on that, but we've found that all of these systems are great, but it takes out that personal contact. I believe that my program manager, my front desk person, or the head instructor is the intel, like military intelligence. They're the ones controlling the computer program at the Pentagon. Your front desk is the Pentagon, right? We found that with the hard cards, things were really in our face on a daily basis. We found without them, things got lost. So the person then comes in and pulls their card. Each student has pertinent information on their card, which is used for a myriad of different things, such as all the different systems on taking it to the next level, such as birthday parties, perfect attendance rewards, gear sales, special events, upgrades. Within our school, we have a variety of colors for each of our cards that represent the program that they're in our school. For example, for all of my trial memberships, such as free months, free 2 weeks, or 3 month free programs that we raffle off, or even for a paid 3 month membership because it's a quick membership, all of my cards are white. Now, for all of our yearly basic plans, which we call our gold plan, the cards are green. For all of my black belt programs, the cards are, or unlimited black belt club, which means they can train anytime, as many times as they want, and we charge for all these things, they're blue. For all of our team leadership character development programs and training students that are in the team leadership, what we call the TLCB, the cards are yellow. For our Masters Elite, they're red. Now, our Masters Elite program is our highest program. It's about $200 per month. My Black Belt Club is about $147 per month, and my basic membership is $127 per month. When a person walks through the door and we pull their card, the front desk person is immediately aware of what potential that they have for an upgrade. Of course, we're looking at all trial memberships and treating them with kid gloves, of course. If they're in a free trial membership, we want to continually reinforce what's going on in class, continually pre-frame and reframe for the sale of a long-term membership. We want to make sure that the parent, if they're the one in charge, is, you know, getting the message. We want to make sure that the student is getting the message. So we are aware, the minute they walk through the door, what program they're in. If they're on one of our basic plans, we're then going to look for, of course, the Black Belt Club upgrade, because that's the next one in the series of our process. So we're going to mention this program or follow up our upgrade system and start planting the seeds. And let me be clear, this sounds like a bit of mind manipulation or just out-and-out sales, but to me, I believe that my Black Belt Club is a program that's well worth the price, and it's highly beneficial to the student. I also believe that the program is going to motivate and keep a student motivated to continue training and staying in our program. The card colors are a great way to keep a daily view of who's where and where they're at and where their potential lies. Ultimately, in my card box, my attendance box, we would love to have all our cards red, because the that's our ultimate highest membership. But imagine if even half of the members were in our Masters Elite program, we would nearly double our income with the same amount of students. For example, in the month of January, I set my goals, you know, November. I started planting my seeds, which I'm going to explain to you guys. And I did 7 upgrades to my Black Belt Club program, and I did 3 upgrades to my Team Leadership Character Development program. Just alone on my billing volume, that added on probably about close to $1,000. That's without adding on another student. That's, if you charge $100 a month, that's like adding on 10 students. So the goal is to set something up that, you know, you're going to be able to build on and build the strength of your school without having to always be in the trenches in the rat race of, say, add on a new student to make more money. Now, here's how I work my program. My upgrade tracker system, basically, number one, on paper, we set our goals. This has to be clearly defined, and I know people think goal setting is saying that I want to do more upgrades, but unless they're clearly defined at how you're going to get those desired results, they're like shooting an arrow in the sky and hoping that it falls on the bullseye. You must say to yourself, you know, it's January, I want to upgrade 5 people to my Black Belt Club, 3 to my Masters Elite, 3 to my Team Leadership Character Development, I want 10 new members, and then I want to get as many renewals that are up for renewal, and you set these goals ahead of time, and you start nurturing them along the process. Now, of course, you're teaching your best, you're giving them great classes, you're making sure the students are growing. That is, you know, common sense. But you want to set your goals to start to work people into those upgrade programs. So number one, set your goals. Number two, this next step is deciding on who the students are that you're going to invite to the desired upgrade. I wanted to use the word target, but, you know, it seems kind of aggressive and harsh. So I say, who is going to be the invited desired upgrade? I usually pick out ahead of time at least a minimum of a month in advance, and I follow the steps necessary to upgrade. And I'm going to give them to you. I'm going to outline them in a minute. Number three, nurture the lead. In the past, I've spoken about a book that I read, which was phenomenal, and a seminar I attended called Baseline Selling. I highly recommend the book, so check it out on Amazon. The book basically looks at the sales lead as a baseball diamond. First base is, you know, the courting process. From first to second is the dating, you know, process. From second to third is, you know, the relationship. And from third to home is the score, you know. So you need to nurture the lead, and basically you need to run the bases by, you know, tweaking what you do and getting from point A to point B. Of course, point B is, you know, first base, C, second, et cetera, et cetera. After you nurture your leads, number four, follow the leads and follow the processes and make necessary adjustments along the way. This is essential. Now, here is the process of my upgrades, and then I'll open up some questions if you have any. But number one, identify the potentials. Of course, if your goal is 5 into your Black Belt Club, you may want to work on 15 members because they're not always going to all pan out. So if you only set a goal for 5 and you contact 5, you'll probably end up with maybe 1. So I usually say triple the amount of invitations that you get out there, or four times the amount of who you want to set your goal at, right? So they're not all going to pan out. Some may come around the next month, and you could still continually nurture those as they may not sign up immediately. But when the next month rolls around, you should have another 15 in the wings. So this is going to take continual goal setting, tweaking and adjusting, and pursuing that initial goal. If you have five, I recommend at least a minimum of 15 invites. Number two, once you have established or identified the potentials, send them out an introduction letter and explain the program and its many benefits. This is called trickle marketing. It's not necessarily asking them to join. It's just making them aware of what you have to offer. So send out to the potential invites an introduction letter. Number three, invite them to a free session to get a taste of what you do. So you could do this in the invitation letter, or it could be a separate letter that's now inviting them. Once you've sent out your first, number one, you identify the potentials. Number two, you have sent out an intro letter or an intro letter and an invitation. And number four, call to confirm that they received the letter and ask them personally if they are going to make it to the desired free class and invitation and if they're interested. And if not, ask why. Sometimes it just may be simply that they're busy that day that you're inviting them. Others may think that it's not potentially for them, that they might not be eligible or talented enough, or, you know, it's too expensive, they assume. And if they can't make it for one of those reasons, then, of course, invite them or ask them if it's okay that you invite them in the future. But explain to them what the program is about and confirm that they got the letter and confirm that they're coming. Number five, once they do the class, thank them for coming in. Pay special attention to that guest as they're walking out the door, your student that you have, and then ask them if it's okay you call them at a later date to speak to them in person. Six, call them on the phone afterwards to thank them for coming down and find out if they enjoyed the class and give them feedback on how they did, also asking if they have any questions at that point. Number seven, set up another appointment to go over the program in person to upgrade them to the next available, you know, program that you're looking to do and see if they're interested. Number eight, at this point, you should have a sales presentation ready, complete with a testimonial in your sales book. Like, my next level clients get a copy of my sales book, and we use this on a regular basis to enroll new members, upgrade new members, and continually keeping them moving along. Number nine, go for the sale. If you find that you're getting price resistance, or you may find that clients seem hesitant or resistant for whatever reason, then ask them why and see if they can overcome their objections. Remember, the key to sales is to find out the reason and then find a way to overcome that reason, right? I always use this one question. You could write this down because it works great for me all the time. I say, in a perfect world, when there are no obstacles to overcome, what could I do right now to get you to sign up? What would it be that I could do to change your mind right now if they're not ready to sign up? Is it price? Is it timing? Is it whatever? I want to ask them, in a perfect world right now, what could I do to get you to sign up? That's one of the questions that I use. So number nine is go for the sale. If you find that you're getting price resistance or may find that the clients seem hesitant, then ask them why and ask them that question. And 10, last but not least, try to sign them up. If they don't sign up, plug them back into the process. And a client may take more time than necessary, than normal, to be sold on this program. For example, years ago, and I don't have exact statistics, so please don't hold me to it, but years ago I think it was something like four or five pieces of direct mail before a person recognized what you were offering, four to five times. Now I hear that it's up to more like 10 to 12 times before they actually recognize your product. So what that tells us is as technology grows and as media grows and marketing grows, people are becoming hardened to our marketing attempts. People are becoming a little bit more business savvy. They understand that the competition is out there, and the process of, you know, marketing to a potential client is different. I'm going to give you an example. We're running a TV commercial right now. And it's interesting because on the TV commercial, it ends by saying, contact us at 1-888-LI-NINJA. That's my 1-800 number, right? 1-888-LI-NINJA. Or check us out on the web at lininja.com. What I'm finding is less people are calling directly off the commercial, the television commercial, but they're taking the process and they're going to the website. So they're piqued their interest. They want to read more, learn more. They go to our website. If the website impresses them, they send us an email. I then call them back and play phone tag 10 or 12 times, offering them a free membership, and then I am able to hopefully get them to come in and try out the class. Years ago, I'd run an ad in the paper. They would call up and set up a class. You know, once I started running an ad with my website, they would go and they would read the website. People are a little hesitant. They want to be wowed. They want to be woed. They want to be able to be saying, like, this is the right decision. So they research and ponder and mill around and take their time. It's not like that, the impulse, because impulse sales are difficult because there's so much out there. You know, it's said that people see 10,000 pieces of email or advertising and media per week or per day even. And I once asked myself, how could that be possible? But if you think of every truck that has a number on it, every sign in a store window, everyone is skywriting, whether you're passing by a building that has a sign on their building, whether you hear it on the radio, see it on TV, or told by a friend, the list goes on and on and on. And that's, you know, a myriad of different companies and millions of different things that you're seeing, whether it be plumbers, landscapers, construction guys, all have advertising. Our minds are set up to filter that stuff out, and I had written an article on this. You should go back in the archives, called White Noise, you know, filtering through the white noise. And it's essential for us to realize that we have to continually nurture these different ideas, you know, in our marketing program. So real quickly, let me just give you the upgrade system in order again. Number one, identify the potentials. Number two, once the potentials are identified, send them an introduction letter. This letter could be just to explain the process, trickle market. You know, feed that to them. Number three, invite them to a free session by letter so that they could get a taste for what you do. Make it special, an invitation letter. Four, call to confirm that they received the letter and then ask them personally to commit to coming in for that desired free class. Five, once they accept your invitation and they set up the class, thank them for coming down. And once they've done the class, then pay special attention to them. And after they're all done, set up an appointment that you could talk to them or tell them that you will be calling them on the phone. Number six, call them on the phone afterwards to thank them for coming down and find out what they thought. If they enjoyed the class, get their feedback. If they didn't enjoy it, et cetera, et cetera. Number seven, set up an appointment where you could be one-on-one with that person and really talk about the upgrades. See if they're interested. If not, number eight, at that point, you know, you could plug them back into the system and say that you're going to call them back again in the future and work on that. But number eight, at that point, have your sales presentation ready, complete with testimonials and pictures. Like I said, my next level clients, they get a copy of my sales book online. It's on month one. And number nine, go for the sale. Be ready. You know, have all your information and your support information ready. And if they seem hesitant, of course, you could use my line. You know, in a perfect world, what could you do? What could I do to make you sign up or get you to sign up? And 10, last but not least, sign them up. And if not, plug them back into the process. It's not over at that point. Now, before I had talked about referrals, why people abandon ship all the time, I have a really unbelievable referral program, and I've talked about this a number of times on many seminars. What I find, though, is school owners, they love the idea. And quickly, you know, long story short, in my school, if someone recommends someone for a year, they recommend five of those people, they get a year for free. Everyone usually goes, wow, that's great. And they go out and they tell their clients about it. Their clients, in return, say, wow, that's great. And maybe if they remember, they refer you a member. You know, if that person doesn't sign up, maybe they'll refer another one. You know, maybe two and no one signs up, they lose motivation. So it's our goal to continually keep them plugged into the system. There are many ways to get referrals. There are many ways to get upgrades. There are many ways to get retail sales. If you think about it, most commercials on television that run, half the time you don't even know what they're selling. most commercials that are funny, most commercials that are, you know, interesting, whatever the reason is that they're out there selling their product, you know, and we're not remembering the commercial, we might see it hundreds of times, but to me, it doesn't drive me to the sale. But what it does do is creates brand name recognition. So when I'm thinking of, at the time when it's right, a phone company, I might think of AT&T, or if I'm thinking of, you know, a hair product, I might think of whatever. You know, we need to keep getting the word out there and not be afraid to continually toot your horn and keep it in the public's eye. If you want to upgrade students, you should be talking about upgrades all the time. You have to build that prestige around your upgrade system so that when people are thinking of, you know, turning their training up a little or, I don't know, really working on getting in better shape, they should think, well, maybe if I upgrade and I've heard about it and I know about it, but maybe I should do it now, they'll be ready to go and jump on board, and it's got to be in their head. That's the same thing with retail sales in your school. If you're just putting your merchandise up and it's sitting on the wall collecting dust and you're not moving your displays around and you're not handing people special coupons and if you're not talking about the brand new T-shirt and you're not changing colors of the clothes and the jackets throughout the year, people will look at those things as they do artwork on the wall and, you know, it becomes a part of the fixture, and it no longer is in their mind. The white noise blanks it out, and they stop thinking about it. So what we need to do is become better at this process and working on it on a more regular basis. So I've been talking for 44 minutes without stopping. So, Kathy, I'm going to ask you if you want to open it up for calls or questions real quickly, and then I will go into a little bit more that I have prepared. So can we open the lines?
I've got the phone lines open.
Is anyone out there? Does anyone have any questions for me on this so far? Or do we have any questions on the web at all?
We do. We have
some. Okay, I'm ready for you.
Okay, what do you do in the free class?
In the free Black Belt Club class or whatever it may be. Well,
yes.
Normally in my program, my Black Belt Club, and let me spell this out, interestingly enough, when I started my Black Belt Club, I did it from a seminar, and it's funny because the person that I went to the seminar on really changed the way I thought about how to run my business. And then I listened to the name of the Black Belt Club, and I started it. But I wanted it to be slightly different, my Black Belt Club, compared to what other people do. And most other people have a Black Belt Club, and they institute a new set of classes for the whole week. And if the student's in the Black Belt Club, they train in those special classes, and so on. I didn't want to start a Black Belt Club per se, and I'm holding up my fingers doing the quote thing, that made me work twice as hard. So in my school, the Black Belt Club is nothing more than one class a month, and it's nothing more than three seminars a year. So they get 12 classes a year for the special Black Belt Club, and then they get three seminars with world-renowned people. And I've had people like Kung Lee, Frank Shamrock, Dan Severin, Hegan Machado, Bart Vail, Master Okada from Japan, Soke Tanimura, and people like that. But anyway, so all I'm giving out is 15 hours of training for the year and a uniform, and they get 10% off on all their gear. That's my Black Belt Club. So when I invite people down for that free class, they're put right in and plugged right into the Black Belt Club. They're coming down as a special guest. All my members welcome them, talk to them, and a lot of them will say at the end of the class, I hope you join. I want you to be a part of what we do in this kind of elite kind of program. And they go through what we do in our Black Belt class. And the Black Belt Club class is a separate curriculum training segment idea that's not done normally in our class. We make it special. In my school, we might do shuriken throwing or archery or obstacle courses or stealth training or whatever. So we make that special, and we try to get people and entice them into our Black Belt Club because it's just a right and the next step in the evolution of their training. Did that answer that question?
It sure did.
I think so.
Sure. Definitely. There's another question from Tom. He says, given the recession and the loss of jobs, how does that affect the business, and how do you work with parents if a job loss occurs?
Well, absolutely. it affects our business because we are like the low man on the totem pole when it comes to necessities. Even though I suggest that we try to get parents and students to realize that what we do is life-changing, to kind of push us up higher on the, you know, the chart of necessities, you know, so that they will cancel other activities before they get rid of martial arts because they see the benefits as being essential to them. And if we're not doing that, we're not selling our program properly. Although, you know, we are going to be looked at like, hey, listen, I can't afford, you know, electric or karate. I'm going to go with the electric or food or, you know, or medical or karate. It's going to be – we're going to be the first to go. So there is absolutely an effect on our schools. But with that being said, we need to look at, you know, what we're doing to keep ourselves out there in the public eye to continually get people that are able and capable of affording what we do and want to, you know, join a martial arts school. You know, the economy is definitely there. I forget, I just saw President Obama on the internet saying that there's potential, you know, million job loss. You know, that's a large number. There are a million people out of work. That's got to affect martial arts schools all over the United States and around the world, right? So we need to just keep on pushing and finding those people that are not affected by this economy and this situation and getting them to join our schools. Of course, cutting back is a smart thing. Be careful about your spending. You know, watch your bills. I just, in the last 2 months, saved myself, and get this is huge. I've just saved myself close to $5,000 per month. Saved myself $5,000 per month by refinancing, cutting back, paying some debt down, and being really creative with what I had to do. Now, this is $70,000 a year. That's more than a lot of people make in a year. Now, I'm saving myself that. Now, two things could happen. If my business is lost by $70,000 a year, I'm in good shape still. If not, I've just turned a $70,000 profit because it's money that I was blowing on things that I didn't need to, or, you know, I've able to change things, et cetera, et cetera. So that's my main thing. Now, Kathy, that answered some of the question. Can you just rephrase the entire question to me, again, that same question it was about?
Sure. I was going to say just the last part of it, like, you know, how do you work with the parents if the job loss does occur? Like, you know, how could you work with the parents?
This is important. Well, first off, let me say that now's the time that you have two choices. You can stick to your guns and say, listen, I charge $199 a month or whatever it may be, $99 a month, and if you can't afford it, you can't afford it. Or we could be creative and use this economy as a way to stimulate new members. Obviously, if we don't get the student, we're going to lose anyway. So if you have a family that has really fell on hard times, I think it's good karma to do the right thing and try to keep them in the program. Do whatever you can to help them and, you know, maybe give them a discount or maybe say, okay, for the next year, rather than seeing you take your children out of the program, I'd like to do a half-price special for you. And you know what? Just make sure that you're clear that they shouldn't be discussing this with others and not running around going, hey, you should complain as well because I saved 50%. You want to make sure that it's really true that they need your help, and then extend yourself to those people. Don't do it with everybody. Just make sure that the circumstance is true. And I'll tell you why I say make sure. I had a guy, you know, it just irks me to even think about this individual. And, you know, the kid was a brown belt with me. The guy was always a pain in the neck, always complaining, always moaning and groaning, always had something to say somewhere, somehow. Anyway, recently, within the last 3 months, he came to me and said, listen, I lost my job. Now, let me start from the beginning. This is a guy who came to me last year and says, I really don't have any money. We're thinking about not enrolling my son in the program. Can you do anything for me? And I said, I normally don't make a sacrifice unless it's really something. And I said, you promised me that you're really truthful with me. So I gave him a discount on the program to start. Anyway, lo and behold, about 9 months out of the agreement goes by, and I see him pull up into my parking lot in a Ferrari kit car. That's, you know, like a Ferrari made out of a, you know, Fiero. But, it, you know, he paid $50,000, $60,000 for it. He's out there. All the parents are around him. He's got the gold wing doors. He's bragging. I walk out into the parking lot. I'm like, wow, nice car. And then right away he realizes. He goes, oh, wow, you know, I got this on barter. I traded my trailer and blah, blah, blah. So I said, yeah, okay, that's great. You know, I went back inside. Anyway, he calls, I was kind of offended, and I got him up on the side and said, listen, you know, I made this deal for you, and, you know, you're out there bragging and so on. So anyway, next month he comes back around. He says, really, I don't have the money. Can you let me out of my agreement? And I broke all my cardinal rules, and I let him out of his agreement. And I hear, lo and behold, he went down the road and joined another school. So he cried the blues, said to me he couldn't afford it. He lied to me to my face, and then he went and joined another school. I am happy because this guy was a jerk. I got rid of him. That's a good thing. But at the same time, I would suggest to be careful because people know that the economy is a good bargaining tool right now. So it's a catch-22. We're kind of like stuck in the middle. We have to be real, real careful at the decisions we make. But we shouldn't be hard-nosed and say, well, you know, tough luck. It's my way or the highway. It's a personal choice. It depends on financially how your business is standing. I have some of my next-level clients that are doing so well that they can't stop people from coming in their school, and they're charging top, top, top dollar, and they're not affected in any way, shape, or form. Maybe it's their community, maybe it's just them, but they're doing well, and they're not, you know, they're not allowing people to cry the blues, although, you know, this is up to you, personal choice. So that's my answer. I try personally to help as much as I can, but at the same time, be careful. Any other questions?
Sure, there's one more. You had mentioned earlier, it says, in as little as 1 month in advance, is that enough time before they expire? Can you do it earlier?
Oh, I don't go for upgrades based on expirations. So, in other words, meaning that a client, we tend to look at things on expiration. So a lot of school owners do this, and I try to tell all my next-level clients and my elite clients that upgrades are upgrades, expirations are expirations. You can upgrade someone in the middle of their program. It doesn't matter if they're in a written contract. You just null and void that contract and start a new one. It could be midway. It could be 2 months later. It doesn't matter. You know, you want to look at that upgrade and target, again, that word, target that upgrade, look for your potentials, and it has nothing to do with renewal dates. Every single person who's in my program that's not in a blue card or red card, we want to look at them and try to get them to upgrade. Midway, doesn't matter. Our goal is to ultimately get them in the Black Belt Club program and our Masters Elite program, or really my most favorite program, my Team Leadership Character Development program, which is just unbelievable. And I think that when you're on the renewal date, people tend to do what I'm doing right now. I only have two payments left, and my Viper is paid in full. It's just crazy. You know, my $1,100 payment's going to go away. And I've been counting down for the last year, 11, 10, 9, 8. You know, I'm down. I got one more payment next month, and I'm done. You know, I have that car. I'm not looking to get into another, you know, $1,100 a month payment. I'm so happy. So people, when they're looking at their agreement and they're looking at their contract, if you don't start, and by the way, Viper has tried to sell me, you know, Dodge, you know, another Viper. And they started about 14 months before the agreement was up. So they started sending me info, showing me the new car, inviting me down to road training, you know, getting me to bring my car in to do free servicing. They were nurturing the deal 14 months out. So the answer to the question is we need to be nurturing those upgrades all the time. We look at potentials based on what program they're in, not based on when they're expiring. And now, just a quick note, do not wait to upgrade, or not upgrade, just to renew your clients. If you don't have an auto-renew program in place, you may want to think about that. But don't wait to upgrade those or renew those people at the end of their agreement. You should be working your renewals. I work my renewals 2 to 3 months in advance. I don't want them to get to the point where they go, oh, I could be rid of that payment. Johnny's not motivated. Johnny's not so happy. Johnny didn't get his bells. I'm not renewing. I'm going to go check out the school down the road. That's why I suggest continually working that lead, working and nurturing that renewal 3 or 4 months before the end of their agreement. And you'll get people that will wait to the day. I have one woman in my dojo that will wait to the day of. She just, no matter what, she has to make me work hard for it. I have to chase her. I actually literally held her kids ransom recently in my school, and I wouldn't let them leave and go in the parking lot without me talking to the mom because she would always make me wait. And so I kept the kids there. I went out to, with the clipboard and the agreement and handed it to her in her van. She filled out the paperwork, and then I brought the kids out to her. So, of course, I was being a little sarcastic by saying hold them for ransom, but at the same time, that's how some people are. They wait till the last minute. So to answer that question, do not wait. Any other questions?
There's no more web questions. Does anybody on the phone line have a question?
Okay.
That might be a wrap on the questions.
Yeah, well, that's good, though. I mean, I must have done my job. As I said, I used to get, you know, depressed when people didn't ask me questions. But then one person told me that, you know, I must be doing a good job of explaining it. So I'm happy about that. So in closing, I'd like to say that the secret to the success of any business is the clients. Of course, if you choose to run a school or any business based on one of two ways, volume, then you have to change the way you do business. For example, a dollar store or a Home Depot that sells massive amounts of stuff, or more so like a high-end clothes store that's much more costly, or a high-end salon versus just a hair-cutting place that you pay much more for a high quality of service that each item sold, they're able to make a larger profit. For the others, it might be less expensive for the store, you know, and they sell much more at a lower price to make up the same amount of money. They have to do twice the amount of volume. So you have to ask yourself, do you want to have 4,000 students, or, you know, realistically, do you want to have 200 students that are paying $80 a month? Or if you marketed and changed and held out, would you rather have 100 students at, you know, $150 a month? That's the question. And the goal, of course, is to decide what kind of business that you want to run. I personally have, an under my belt, I could say, been there, done that. I've had as high as 1,200 students in five schools. And right now, I have to be honest, I just had a birthday. I'm 44 years old. I'm leaning towards a different model, which to me is high quality, high profit, low stress, smaller amount of clientele. The goal for me is to get a more qualified clientele that really understands the mentality that I preach in my school. They shouldn't be afraid to pay a little bit more if they want a higher standard of excellence and more attention paid to them. I want them to realize that we are the Lamborghini of martial arts. We are the Ivy League of martial arts. That's one of our slogans. And I am more interested in that client who gets it. Not the client who's always nickel and diming me for everything, looking for a deal and a bargain. Not to say that that's not out there and those people aren't good people, and we want to try to help those people. But if that's what we're trying to attract, it's going to really create such an unbelievably, you know, big pain in the neck for us in the long run. So I believe wholeheartedly that my schools are the Ivy League of martial arts, and we put so much more into the things that most other schools don't even comprehend, in my opinion. When we look at our students, we're looking at the entire student creating a complete warrior. The other day I was sent to a link forum where someone was bashing me as an individual and a martial artist, and they said that I'm 10% martial artist, 90% business person. They went on to justify their statement by saying that I was a sellout, that they explained to the buddy that they were talking about me online about, they said that years ago I only had a handful of black belts and my integrity was much higher. Now it's obvious that I'm a sellout because I have 250 black belts that have been promoted through my school. Now, in his defense, I realized that this person was ignorant because they didn't know me and they don't know, of course, what I do, but I wanted to say to them, you know, and talk to them and email them and say, what, you know, you don't understand what's going on, but I bowed out gracefully. But just to give you an idea, it's simple mathematics. When my school started out, you know, 18 years ago, after the first 5 years, it took 7 years to get a black belt in my school, and then later on I tweaked it down to five. But in the early days, I was so hardcore due to the lack of my teaching experience that no one made their black belt. Some people may have looked at that as integrity. Now, when I look back on it, I looked at that as being, you know, bad. I was a terrible teacher. I would justify by saying that these students just don't get it. They couldn't hack it. Then I realized that it was me, that my systems, my teaching ability, my curriculum was bad. Or it wasn't where it should be. And then I revamped everything, and immediately I started to see results. So as I grew, so did my black belt population. And it took about 13 years before we really started to produce more and more black belts. Now, because we're so good at retaining students, we're not losing them, and they're achieving the black belt level. So as I grew, my black belt population grew. And, you know, this is something that people don't see. So when this individualized, we're selling out. But to school owners such as yourselves out there, you probably understand that even with the integrity that we have, it still takes time to nurture. But if we're doing our job correctly, eventually it should be the goal to produce black belts and produce great quality students. And if we do it right, we're going to have more of that. Anyway, like I said before, if we're successful, people will take pot shots. You know, we're not just in the fighting business. We're in the business of training people to be ultimate warriors. Or are we? The question is, are we in the business of teaching people to be life warriors? You know, the United States military is made up of many people who couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag. Some of them are tough and deadly. But as a country, as a military, we're unstoppable. So if you look at this long and hard at your business practices and look at them as being just as important as your physical curriculum and your teaching on the floor, you're going to see that you need to have a balance of the whole picture, physical, mental, spiritual, and then the business practices. You know, without it, you're not only hurting yourself, but you're hurting others, because those students will never recognize their dreams. Anyway, ending up, because I'm a little over time, I wanted to offer everyone, if you're interested and you haven't gotten my book already, my book is called Martial Art Business 101, Hoo-Yah, Living the Dream, and I'm going to offer it to you by February 15th at 50% discount. It's $39.95, so I'm going to sell it at $15. If you're interested, just email me at Renshi, L-I-Ninja, at AOL.com. That's R-E-N-S-H-I, L-I-Ninja, L-I-N-I-N-J-A.com, Renshi, L-I-Ninja.com. And check us out on the web also at TakingItToTheNextLevel.com, but I'll offer it for 50% off until February 15th of 2009. And I want to say thank you again, Kathy, for all your help. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope that somehow this helps school owners and in turn will help students. And always remember, you can email me anytime. Thanks for listening, and take your business to the next level. I say sayonara. Have a good day. Bye-bye.